Welcome to that 80s show, Asto Pisto Lucky, the most confusing song if you are Greek, meaning leave the hairdryer, lucky, lucky, lucky. Good morning, Dory.
I don't believe that that's what it says. I don't believe you.
That's what it says. Misheard lyrics. Asto Pisto Lucky, leave the hairdryer. We should get some Greek friends. I hope it's true.
You know, that song, as much as I hate it, and I do hate it, it really has a weird nostalgia for me. It takes me right back to my high school days. Like, right there. I'm right there. Right now.
You're right there.
I'm not here anymore. But I'm there. I'm there.
Oh, so that 80s show. The show all about... It's not nostalgia. I've got something to talk about towards the end of the show about how we're not actually nostalgic for the 80s. We're nostalgic for something else. It's a very scientifically written article, which we'll get into later. That 80s show every week. Ooh, a lot about 80s pop culture, 80s music, movies, TV shows. The here's and now's. And people are saying to me, hey, listen, obviously you guys are going to be playing the new Elton John and Britney Spears song. And we're like, no, we won't.
Yeah. Why would we do that?
Well, because Tiny Dancer is from the 70s, early 70s. Fuck no. You know,
exactly.
And as much as we like the Friends iteration, Hold Me Close, Tony Danza, it's still not enough. Do you know?
And also, Britney's from the 90s. We don't care.
Did you know Misheard Lyric is called the Mondegreen?
No.
Hell.
Spell?
M O N D E Green. I never heard of that.
Okay. It sounds like Green Mouth. I mean, Monde,
maybe.
Is like Latin, French, whatever, for mouth.
Yes. Afrikaans, mond. Mond.
Latin, French, Afrikaans, same thing.
Yeah. I don't know, we're 5-6 minutes in. You could have heard the biggest lot of bullshit through so much made-up stuff.
That's why I say I don't believe you. I don't believe a word you say.
Dory, we've got to put Asto Pisto Lucky, leave the hair dry Lucky, I promise you. If that is my favorite. Well, listen, there are numerous favorite things. Let's get straight into it. Now, Dory, I know you also on the internet, you're looking at all the memes, you love the GIFs. You've obviously seen there's a new She-Hulk out, right?
I have.
Okay. I know you're not into superhero stuff, but this is meme central, right? So it comes out and, you know, it's like one of those. Anything to do with superheroes, you got like 30-year-old white guys don't like anything. Don't like, it's just a problem. So it hasn't come out to the best, like, kind of cultural response. And it's not great. Like, never mind all that. It's like when it shows shit, it's shit. Like, it looks like Shrek. I mean, that's the kindest way I can say it, and it's kind of like Ally McBeal. It's okay. It is what it is, right?
Ooh. So they were speaking about it on the Gareth Cliff show this week, and the thing that Gareth said was the most unrealistic is that women don't lose their shit. Not like men. Women don't become this crazy creature.
So
men do.
I've only
the worst part about it.
You see, I've only watched one episode so far, which I mean, I deserve a medal. She doesn't transform by getting angry. She's got more control over it than Bruce Banner does, right?
Okay.
Yeah, so
okay.
I think that's kind of like the story. She can choose, and when she's the Hulk, she's not a monster. She's just green and big and okay.
What's the point then?
That's what I'm saying, okay? So like so far she hasn't
she's
lost.
It's literally Shrek.
It's a Shrek, I'm telling you. I'm telling you, in the morning she's back to a princess, at night it's Princess Fiona all over the place, right? So, but in the 80s, now obviously 1980s was the heyday of Hulk, right? Because we had Lou Ferrigno as the Incredible Hulk. They just painted him green. There was no CGI.
Mm.
He put on little green booties and they painted him green. Great Hulk, awesome. Now, She-Hulk was created in the 80s, right? In the 1980s.
Yeah.
In the comic book. And, I mean, it wasn't like a whole, like, woman's lib movement or anything like that. Horny comic book writing men, comic book drawing men went, you know what? We should have a comic book hero whose literal superpower is her clothes tearing off without her knowledge. Okay, so that's...
Yeah, seems legit. Yeah, yeah.
That's it, right?
Not right.
So that was the only superpower her clothes came off. So they started off. They never actually brought her into the Lou Ferrigno show. They were supposed to, because then they made a made-for-TV movie post, like kind of the She-Hulk coming into canon, and she was never in that. They went through a couple of iterations of, like, could they bring her to the big screen? Could they make her live action? Now, you know, we remember the 80s wasn't the best time for superhero movies. We had probably the biggest, highest profile was Howard the Duck until Batman 1989.
But what about Superman?
Oh, that was 70s, though. And the one in the 70s, the Christopher Reeve one was awesome. The ones in the 80s with Richard Pryor, like, I love them, but critically panned, right? So superheroes weren't what they are now. Like, for the past 15 years, like, it's just been superhero. Like, it wasn't like that. So everyone was kind of scared, and they never really got into it. There were a couple of attempts at it in the 90s. Right, and they tried like Baywatch girls, and they tried like beach volleyball players to cast her. But there have come out some stills in the past week and a story. Dari, this website I'm going to give you is called lostmediawiki.com. Oh my word. We're going to post up the link with the story. There is so much crap on here. It is unreal. What a rabbit hole.
Is it the rabbit hole of your dreams?
Oh my word. Lostmediawiki.com, right? So these stills and a movie poster actually appeared because in the mid-90s, they had cast Brigitte Nielsen to be She-Hulk.
Brigitte.
Her, right? Sylvester Stallone. No,
it would be Brigitte if it's a German thing. Then it's
no, it's, yes. She's Danish. And I try to look on Wikipedia. Yes, I try to look on it, but you know what they do? They put in the little Danish phonetics. I'm like, that doesn't help.
Does not help.
No, it doesn't help, right? So
it's okay. There are, call her Brie.
Brie, right? There are some stills of her in her She-Hulk outfit. They put these like publicity shots out. They never made the movie. They never got into it. Just never happened. But she looks pretty imposing. I don't know if she would have been big mid-90s, how big she was in the 80s when she was Red Sonja.
But she's very pretty.
She is, and she's very muscular, and I imagine she'll get angry, and I imagine
good
her clothes.
Cheekbones.
Huge cheekbones. But, yeah, I think, like, in the 90s, that they would have been like, that weird girl that was in some stuff in the 80s that was married to Sylvester Stallone, her. I don't think she was a superstar in the 90s anymore, right? So
when did she have the very, very short blonde hair? Was that 80s or 90s?
That was like, that was 80s. That
was, because that's how she looked in Cobra.
Yeah, that was 80s. Yes. So Brigitte Nielsen as She-Hulk, like, I'm not into any of the She-Hulks. Just put a wig and lady face Lou Ferrigno. That's what I want to see. Just put some lipstick on Lou Ferrigno. I don't want to see anyone else. I do not.
I agree.
No. So that's our take, because we've got to be contemporary. We've got to be hot. We've got, what are the kids talking about? They're talking about She-Hulk. I think episode 3 came out yesterday. I will watch it because I'm a Marvel completist, but it's painful.
I'll be honest, absolutely not of interest to me at all.
No. Rather watch Shrek. Yeah. Rather watch Shrek. So guilty pleasures aside of women whose superpowers are their clothes ripping off at inopportune moments whenever they get angry, we all know that I love Italo Disco, right?
We do.
I've been debating whether I should play this trailer in its entirety because it's got some Italian in it, but it's got some English. Oh. So I found a documentary, Italo Disco, The Sparkling Sound of the 80s. Okay.
Ooh.
Take a listen. Now, there's some Italian parts, okay? But this is so Italo Disco fantastic, you just have to hear this.
Italo Disco is a virus, a magical virus.
È stato il momento in cui l'Italia ha esportato il maggior numero di dischi nel mondo.
Vamos alla playa, oh.
Non era una musica che mi piaceva. Poi mi sono reso conto che non si può considerare un genere, ma un insieme di sottogeneri.
La Defesa Fellini, la rappresentante più eloquente della donna italiana contemporanea.
Mamma mia.
Io andai in vacanza a Londra.
e tra Michael Jackson, Elton John, c'era Dolce Vita alla radio.
First came the song, and then when it had success, then the producer would think, who are we going to put on the cover?
Wenn man Musik wie diese alten Italo-Disco-Platten hört und dann hört man Daft Punk, dann ist es doch erstaunlich, wie ähnlich und wie verwandt diese Musik ist.
Se non ci fosse stata quella musica, il sound europeo degli anni 80 non ci sarebbe mai stato.
Italo Disco era la colonna sonora di quell'estate.
Gli anni 80 sono stati raccontati in maniera molto superficiale.
Nel contesto italiano dobbiamo parlare di mega discoteche.
Aber Italien führen, was so eine DJ-Kultur betrifft.
Noi eravamo futuristi. Ma indicavamo il futuro. E io sono futurista ancora.
Aha, diese Produktion kam aus Italien. Deswegen dieser Name Italo Disco.
I don't think I could have played that in English.
So, I mean, there was the odd English word here and there, but...
Oh, but you got it. You heard enough there. Dolce Vita, the one lady's voice, not the German lady in the end, the one lady kind of in the middle, yeah. That's Sandra. Sandra, of course. She said, the story of the 80s has been told very badly, and this is the true story. That's what she says. So that is a documentary called so it's about Italo Disco, the story of Italo Disco. I've got the link here. We're going to post that up on that 80 Show SA Facebook page. I'm going to watch it.
So is the documentary coming or does it exist?
It's out already. It's about a year old.
Okay.
I only found it now. So I'm going to be watching this. I mean, what you didn't see there, bodies glistening, Italian people looking gorgeous, synthesizers.
Were they very short shorts and hairy legs and hairy chests?
Yes.
Gold chains.
And the men looked fantastic as well. Yeah. Oh, no, it was awesome. So, you know what the cool thing is about listening, and this is going to be me just being like, I'm European, so like, this is going to make me sound really stupid, is that like when you hear German and Italian people talking, they could literally be talking about anything, right? And you can either make it really cool or really filthy, like especially the German dudes. You can just make it sound so dirty.
And the thing is, with some Italian accents, it actually sounds like somebody putting on an Italian accent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it sounds like somebody exaggerating it.
I know. Like, stop. Oh, no, this is Italian face. You're going to get cancelled. You can't have such a strong Italian accent. You're obviously putting it on, you idiot. So documentaries and She-Hulks aside on that 80 show, we do love to watch movies. We pop off. Have you seen there's a new show coming out about set in Blockbuster? So it's like set late 80s, early 90s. And it's kind of like Superstore, but they're all in Blockbuster at the turn of the 80s.
No, that sounds cool.
Mm.
That sounds cool.
Yeah.
I love Empire Records.
Yeah. So I imagine it'd be like that. So we're off to the Blockbuster or whatever the video store was in your area. And we're going to make two hires for your weekend movie viewing pleasure. Dory always goes first. Oh, Dory, your confessions of a serial killer. I mean...
Did you watch it?
I watched the trailer. I watched lots of trailers and lots of clips. That was not a good movie.
How bad is that acting? I mean, it's hilarious. It's actually hilarious.
I mean...
Wow.
I've got the hugest respect for behind-the-scenes guys on film sets, like the hugest. I mean, if you work with anyone in film, like they make things happen. You have never met like a group of MacGyvers like these guys, right? But there's a reason that a lot of them should stay behind the camera.
I mean, really?
Very few, a few good success stories.
He did definitely fit the role of creepy serial killer.
I mean, he
fit the part.
He did. He did a little too well. A little disconcerting you are. But did you watch my movie, Blind Date?
I have not had time to watch anything.
Did you at least listen to Bruce Willis Under the Boardwalk?
I did not.
Mm.
But I know it.
Okay.
I don't need to listen to it. I know it.
Okay, just sing it in your head now and then give us your movie recommendation of the week.
Before I get to my, and it's not a movie, it's a TV series, but before I get to my TV series, I want to just hop very briefly out of the 80s. And talk about that documentary that's currently on Netflix, The Trainwreck, about Woodstock 99.
Oh, my God.
Have you watched it?
It's so amazing. Let's talk about it.
I binge watched it. Let's just quickly hop out of the 80s.
No, let's actually spend a fair time out of the 80s. I mean, we're a pop culture show.
I remember watching this thing live. Do you
really?
Remember there was a thing on TV? There was a thing on TV where they kept like showing the interviews with the guys backstage and stuff. And I remember watching it, and I remember specifically watching Bush's performance because I'm a big fan of Bush.
Mm.
And they were on the Friday night, which is when everything was still okay. Because remember, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And the Friday night, things were still okay. They weren't amazing, but things were still okay. And Bush performed the Friday night, so everything was really, it was great. But then, I mean, when I watched the documentary, I didn't even realize that Bush actually calmed the crowd down.
So,
because Korn had played just before them and riled the crowd up to like a frenzy.
So before we
I think the security was worried about a stampede. And,
correct, right. Yeah. So before we before we get too much into the story, what Dori's talking about is there's a documentary on Netflix called Trainwreck, and it's the story of Woodstock 99. Okay, so it was these constant attempts to like cash in on Woodstock. They had done a Woodstock 94. I think they had done a Woodstock in the 70s as well. And then in the 80s, they did those Apple Fests. Remember Steve Wozniak did like Apple Fest, right? And we had a lot of Live Aid. The 80s was fine. So they kept trying to cash in the 90s. And this is the story.
And I remember 94, because 94 was when it was just rain and it was just a big mud bath.
Okay, right.
And it was a bit of a disaster.
So,
but it wasn't the same kind of disaster.
No. So Woodstock 99, it was the same venue, right? It was on the same farm where they had the original Woodstock.
No, that's the whole point, is that they had it in like on some military base.
Okay, right. Yes, okay, right.
Yeah.
So the organizers cut every single corner they could cut, right, to make money. Because 94, they didn't make any money, and they just cut every single corner, which meant, like, outsourcing security to, like, not security companies. They were just high school kids, basically, or slackers. They outsourced all the food. So they had no control of literally anything around there, and things just started progressively getting out of hand. It's kind of like we were all in lockdown when Firefest was on, so you have no excuse not to have watched Firefest.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what Firefest could have become.
Nothing compared to this thing.
No, because Firefest never actually happened. This is what would have happened if Firefest had happened. And
that's true.
So what Dori's saying, it's a three-day festival, 250,000 people over the 3 days.
Mm.
Day one, like Dori says, is cool. Korn comes on, they rile the crowd up, Bush calms everyone down, cool, normal concert, normal festival vibes. But then they start running out of food. No, food starts getting very expensive. They start running out of clean water.
Price gouging.
Correct.
Okay, first of all, let's just say, so it was hot.
Mm.
It's like the middle of July in New York. It is like a heat wave, ridiculously hot. People were passing out from heat exhaustion, left, right, and center. And they were selling water it started at $4 a bottle, which was already ridiculous because they said the average price of a bottle of water at that time was 65 cents. And the water started at $4 a bottle and within a day went to $12 a bottle, which is insanity.
That's pretty normal for South Africans whenever we go anywhere.
There were drinking fountains, but 250,000 people and like 10 drinking fountains. The queues were ridiculous. People couldn't get to it. And then it turned out in the end, that the drinking fountains had been contaminated by the Portaloo water. So people actually got sick from basically poop in the water.
Yeah.
Basically, people got this condition called trench mouth, which is what people in World War I suffered from living in the trenches.
Indeed. So,
But you know what? Okay, there's a few things that I take away from this show. It is literally like watching a train wreck. But I was amazed, considering all the shit that went down. Do you know only 3 people died? They never said, hey?
The week that documentary came out, right, if you just typed into Google the order recommendations, it went, how many people died? Immediately it said, at Woodstock 99.
Because they don't tell you in the docu how many people, and you know that people died. And I was expecting it to be, oh my God, how many people died at this thing? Miraculously, three people, and I mean, the one girl was hit by a car.
Yeah, they didn't even die. Yeah, they didn't even die because of the events that happened.
No, the one guy did die of heat exhaustion.
Okay, right.
They said that he did die of heat exhaustion and dehydration or whatever or something like that. But they also said he was very obese, okay. And there might have been other factors.
Right.
And then there was a guy in his 40s who dropped dead of a heart attack, which I think happens
right
at probably every music festival that's ever existed. Someone will die of a heart attack.
Yes, especially when
people die of a heart attack at gym every day. You know, like, yeah. It happens.
Why Daria and I are so callous about this is because if you watch, even just watch the trailer of this, right? Maybe we'll even put the trailer on. Okay, you'll watch as you go, no. People died. There was fires. Stages were being torn apart. I mean, Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit. Stampede. They ripped up ATMs. I mean, it was, and also what happened is, so during the day they had all these like various like rock bands, and Sheryl Crow was there and Jewel was there, and that at night they had the rock bands. But then as the rock band finished, everyone went to the hangar where they had an all night rave, and Paul Oakenfold was there, and Fatboy Slim. And so people just raved all night. And if we, you know, that time, so 1999-2000 was kind of like I'd left school and that was like my university days. And in a lot of it, they talk about, now there's a frame. We didn't know what toxic, there was no toxic masculinity then. It was just what we were. We're just dicks, right? But this was the peak of culture of FHM was all over the place. Maxim, like you were not validated as a woman unless they could put you in a bikini and put you in one of these magazines, right? It was kind of like synthetic drugs. So ecstasy, Molly, MDM, all those were so easy to get. And it was also kind of this influx of like a whole bunch of different drinks. You know, there was just like a lot of like...
Yeah.
Types of, and I'm talking about South Africa, and I imagine this was amplified, like Smirnoff Spins and like drinks that were easy drinking but high in alcohol just completely plastered you. So I was like probably the same age as the majority of people going to this concert. I was like, I completely identify with the culture because it was macho, it was jock culture, but like I don't think we've ever, it was just the peak of all of that kind of congregated at once, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I think it was even said at some point in the documentary, it was just these college frat boy douchebags, basically.
Yeah.
Was the majority of the crowd.
But you know the problem was, you didn't even know you were, we were all college frat boy douchebags, because it was just, it was American Pie, it was Limp Bizkit, it was Blink 182, it was all, that was just the culture at that time. So just by liking music and watching movies and reading magazines, you were a frat boy douchebag. It just, you just were. We were conditioned.
But this is, and if you look at the contrast between 1969 Woodstock, and I mean, I wasn't there, obviously, but I mean, I've watched docies, I know a bit about it. The contrast between 1969 and 1999. In 1969, there was a lot of nudity, but it was all about the hippies and peace and love and freedom and we're going to do our own thing. And there was no lechery associated to it. Whereas the nudity at 99 was literally, and I mean, you saw it the whole way through the docu, show us your tits. Show us your tits, where it was just men going, show us your tits. And I mean, the men were walking around naked as well. But it was, there was just something gross about it in 1999.
Yeah.
Whereas in 1969, it was all, oh, look at how free these hippies are. They're so happy, frying in the sun in their natural form.
Correct.
And 1999, completely different situation.
It was just menacing.
It really was. And the other big difference that I thought of as well, remember in 1969, okay, you had acid and you had weed. That was pretty much it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then what did you, I mean, you just mentioned, all the synthetic, the ecstasy, the, all the kind of stuff. And I think just the difference in the drugs made a huge thing as well.
Mm.
The difference in the music.
Yeah.
Think about the music that played at Woodstock. It was all about peace and love and anti-war and let's all love each other. And then look at Korn and Limp Bizkit and the stuff they're singing about. I mean, even
Red Hot Chili Peppers get told to calm everyone down, and their encore song is "Let's Start a Fire." Like, I mean, what do you?
I mean, really? I looked. I was my mouth was hanging open at that point.
No.
What?
I thought that was done for dramatic effect, like for the documentary. And I went back and checked. No, that is legitimately what they did. They got told. They said, we can't calm anyone down. And they fucking played Let's Start a Fire.
I mean, do you think, because, I mean, are they assholes? Are they ourselves Red Hot Chili Peppers, or do you think they were like, let's see what happens? Or do you think they were like, fuck all this?
I think you just, you know, so like as much as like Fred Durst and that gets painted as a dickhead, is that if you're brought out to play to a crowd and a crowd is responding to you like that, I think you have to be, I don't know, I just think
you're going to push the envelope.
You're just going to go, you know what, I've never seen anything like this, let me just see where this goes. And I think like, you know, you're not Red Hot Chili Peppers for, you know, you're Bush for a reason and you're Red Hot Chili Peppers for a reason. You know what I mean?
I mean, Bush were very British about it. Yes. They were gentlemen. They were calming everything down. They
were as Gavin Rossdale always would be. As he always would be.
Well, it turned out to be not such a gentleman. But anyway, that's a story for another.
Yeah, no, so that is yes, Trainwreck 99.
Watching this. I mean, and like I say, I was actually, because I mean, oh, the organizers. Oh, that made me so angry because the one guy was the original organizer of Woodstock. And he completely lost his way and just wanted money. And then the other guy who he teamed up with, that was a John Scher, I think his name was. That guy, I was just like, oh, my God, what an asshole. And he was, like, completely in denial about all the bads. And he did you catch that bit where he victim-blamed the woman?
Yes, yes.
Where he was like, oh, the woman had been groped. But look at what they were doing. They were taking their tops off. And it was like, wow, dude. Just wow. I was so sad about how the original guy just really lost, like, the whole idea of it.
Yeah, listen, it's a terrible time capsule and a warning, a fair warning to our dear friend, the celeb savant Barrett, who wants to put on his massive 80s concert of his dreams. If you do it in a field, that happens. If you put it on a boat, it becomes the boat from hell. just make a Spotify playlist.
Oh, but we can learn lessons from that, eh? We can learn the security guys, the paramedics, the stories. Oh, okay, yeah, it was literally like watching a train wreck. But
yeah, no.
Anyway, should we talk about my series from the 80s now?
Let's do that.
My series isn't necessarily a recommendation. I have a small suspicion that we might have done this before. When I say we, I mean you, because I know I haven't done it before.
All right.
But I wanted to give it a mention because it came into my universe. I can't even remember how. Over the last week, I'm going to talk about Married with Children.
Just give me a second here.
love and marriage go together like a horse and carriage.
Okay, there we go. You heard that. It was your parents tried to get you out the room, but you weren't getting out the room.
So, Married with Children actually ran from 1987 to 1997. So, in theory, it's more of a 90s show. But it started in the 80s. And I'm actually going to talk about a specific episode that was from their third season, which was 1989.
Okay.
And it just, my parents and I used to sit and watch the show religiously every week. We would sit and watch it. And we used to laugh our asses off. And we thought it was great. This show would never exist today for so many reasons.
You don't think?
No. Not in its, I mean, maybe in theory it would exist. But so much of the actual content would just be, oh, un-PC, cancelable, no, can't do.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know if you remember. So it's the mom, the dad, and the son and the daughter. We've got Al Bundy, played by Ed O'Neill.
Well,
Peggy Bundy, played by Katie Sloss.
Let's contextualize this, because maybe you're a youngster, you're going, okay, who is it? So Al Bundy is I can't remember his name in Modern Family, but he's married to
yes.
Sofia Vergara's character, right?
He's the
Jay, he's the patriarch.
Jay, yes.
Okay, so that's Al Bundy.
Right. His wife is Peggy Bundy, played by Katie Sagal, who, I mean, she's done a fair amount of movies. I'm not going to start listing them now. Kelly Bundy, the daughter, played by Christina Applegate, who I love. She's actually one of my favorites.
Yes,
I really do
she's
love.
Great.
The brother, Bud.
Yes.
Played by David Faustino. I don't know if he ever went on to do anything else. I honestly don't know. The neighbors were big characters in this show. Marcy.
Yes.
And her first husband, Steve. And then she got remarried to a guy named Jefferson.
Now, he was the uber bully on Revenge of the Nerds. He was like archetype 80s bully.
Now, I just want to read you a couple of the character descriptions from Wikipedia because they're hilarious. Al Bundy is a misanthrope, afflicted by the so-called Bundy curse that consigns him to an unrewarding career selling women's shoes and a life with a family that mocks and disrespects him, who still enjoys the simple things in life. He constantly attempts to relive his high school football days when he was an all-state fullback. His most noted achievement was having scored 4 touchdowns in a single game for Polk High. There it is. There you go. His favorite things in life are the local nudie bar, his collection of Big Uns magazine, his Dodge car with almost 1 million miles on the odometer, and a television show called Psycho Dad.
Psycho Dad.
Yes. And then, I mean, I'm not going to read all of them, but like basically let's read Kelly, because this is why I'm saying I don't think the show would exist today. So Kelly is a dumb blonde who's often derided as promiscuous and dates guys who irritate Elle to the point of where he wants to physically assault them. Her stupidity manifests in many ways, from forgetting ideas on the spot to mispronouncing or misspelling simple words. She and her brother Bud generally get along, but enjoy belittling one another. I mean, belittling one another is an understatement.
Yes. Character assassinating.
They constantly insult each other. Yes. Constantly. Yeah. And I just think that her character is such a stereotype, and the way they're constantly going at her about like being, you know, being like a slut, basically. They slut shame her constantly.
You know what the thing is? You know what the thing is, though?
Homophobia in this show.
There is so much about Kelly. It's the constant running gags of all these different rock bands of the 80s that she slept with. So there's this constant thing about her just making suggestions and innuendos of all these like massive guys that she had relations with. So that's quite funny.
Yes, it is. But I don't know if it would work today. Is what I'm saying. I don't think it would be acceptable today.
So I'm gonna disagree with that though, right? So Married with Children was it was a prime time show, and it was super controversial at the time because your families were the Cosbys or the Keatings. Or was it Keatings or Keatons from Michael Keaton? Yes. Okay, Keating. Right. But it was modern Full House. That was kind of your families, right? Full House was all a little bit weird because the mother was dead, right? But Married with Children was a complete counter of that. It goes, you know what, like, people are shit. Roseanne then did it, like, also in a bit of a not as over-the-top way, right, because it showed not everyone's rich. I think the surprising thing was because it was quite a prime time show, right? It was on peak. Mm. It was at the best time. I think there's lots of shows now, like Sunny in Philadelphia or shows like Dave, or there's a lot of, like, it's a bit more subversive. So you would, I suppose, because we have more access to different TV shows now. But if I think of something like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, is exactly like an heir apparent to modern, to Married with Children. And it's exactly the same thing. Because I don't think you're supposed to actually ever side with them, because they're so terrible and they're so over the top. And I don't know if it was Sunny in Philadelphia was meant that way. You're meant not to like anybody. You're meant to always root against them. And yes. I think Married with Children was that way because they were just so terrible. They're just horrible people that you weren't meant to look at and go, oh, I want to be like that. You know, I don't know. So I do think stuff now like that gets made. It's just more counterculture.
Okay, you might have swayed my opinion. You might have.
Listen, you're not going to turn me on. I keep saying Modern Family. Married with Children. I loved that show. I mean, I was watching that. And again.
So did I.
I loved it. So did I. And I'm not a misogynist. I'm not a homophobe. It's like, it didn't, you know.
I know. It was so stupid. It had the family dog. You could hear his thoughts. Like somebody voiced the family dog.
Oh, God, that
dog.
Was hilarious, yeah.
Do you remember? I mean, it was just so silly in so many ways. But I think that's what made it so appealing, especially to us because we were young. It was so different to anything else that existed at that time. It was unique, completely.
So when Amazon first came out in South Africa, it had Married with Children, the full all seasons on. So I watched it, and we're talking like maybe 2 years. In the past 2 years, I've watched everything again. And the humor and that kind of take, the like super cynical take on everything, and that like one-upping each other and like that sibling rivalry and the family rivalry, it's still, there's so much of it. It's still so funny. And the one thing about the Bundys was that as much as in that house they were constantly at each other, God help anybody that tried to take on one of them, because then they would just unite as a family and just destroy you.
Realistic, actually.
Exactly, right? Exactly. Yeah. So, oh my God, I loved Married with Children. The one thing I never understood quite, though, is as much as they were made out to be, like, super poor, the size of his house off a shoe salesman's, like, salary. Like, he had a double story, like, four-bedroom, double-garaged, massive house. And he's supposed to be just a shoe salesman. So I never quite understood that. I suppose all his winnings from Poke High. Oh, my word. That every time he went into the Poke High story, like, he just knew. And the story changed every time. It just became more dramatic. So over the top.
Realistic again. Yeah. So just a quick mention. There was, as I said, I'm going to talk specifically about an episode from 1989, which was in season three. The episode was called Her Cups Runneth Over. In which Al Bundy and his friend Steve have to go and buy a bra for Peggy for her birthday. And, I mean, this episode, I watched, okay, it is in 11 installments on YouTube of 2 minutes each.
Okay.
2 minutes at a time, you can watch 11 installments of this episode on YouTube. It is ridiculous. But this episode was too much for a woman named Terry Ricolta,
okay,
who was an anti-obscenity activist.
Oh, my word.
And she complained. She went on the rampage after this episode, and she actually got them to change the time that it was going out because it was going out at 8:30 p.m.
Yes.
On TV in America, and they moved it to 9 p.m. because Terry Ricolta, who, I'm just saying, was a Mormon.
Okay.
She said this show was absolutely just too raunchy, too much sexual content, too explicit, absolutely offensive, absolutely not family viewing. It should not exist. But if it is going to exist, it should be put on later. And, yeah, she won her case in terms of that. But what happened with this is, do you know the Streisand effect? You know what the Streisand effect is?
No.
Okay. I'm going to actually want to read you what the Streisand effect. So basically the Streisand effect, the reason it's called that is because Barbara Streisand was trying to get the press to leave her alone. And I think it was around her wedding where she didn't want people to be photographing her wedding. And because she made such a fuss about it, people then all of a sudden, because nobody cared a shit. But because she made a thing about it, people then paid attention and she got harassed and, like, the drones came over trying to take photos and stuff. Whereas before, nobody cared.
Right.
So what happened with this was because of this woman, Terry's protest against Married with Children, which, of course, made the media, people then went, oh, maybe I should watch that. That sounds cool. And all of a sudden, it rocketed the show to success. And it probably wouldn't have run for 10 years if it hadn't been for that protest.
I mean, if you want to know why it's such a raunchy episode, if you just Google image search, Her Cups Runneth Over. Image number two is a lingerie model in full-on lingerie standing in front of Al Bundy. Image number five is him fondling a woman's breasts. So you know exactly what this was.
It was, I mean, when I say raunchy, the funniest part is, so they're at this lingerie store trying to get this bra. And the funniest part is he's talking to this guy who's sitting behind the counter. And they're having this, like, very manly conversation. And then the guy gets up to walk out. And he's wearing, like, high heels and suspenders. And
no.
And, of course, Al was, like, freaked out. Because, oh, my God. But it was really funny. It really is.
It was, listen, if you have any, like, if you have any ounce of a sensitive disposition, you're probably not listening to the show. So, you know, we know that you get it, right? It is anything in Married with Children. I don't remember this episode, but, I mean, it looks hilarious. It's – you're not supposed to be on his side. You're supposed to look at the guy and go, how cringeworthy, what a douchebag, what a terrible person. And why all of this worked, actually, they're such brilliant actors. They're all such phenomenal actors that they can actually carry such terrible characters. And I think that's why it works. They realize who they're playing.
Yeah. But I disagree with you. You actually are on Ed's side. You are on Al's side. Because as bad as he is, his family's worse. So you actually empathize with Al in terms of the family. So I disagree with you there.
And listen,
I thought this was going to be a quick discussion, but clearly not.
No. And listen, you are not a man, And I'm just going to do it. It's the patriarchy. Call me what you want. It is what it is. You are not a man if you don't arrive home after a long day's work, sit on your couch, and put your hand down your pants. We call it the Bundy in the biz. We call it the Bundy.
Hey, so let me ask you, what are you doing with your hand down your pants? What's happening there?
Listen, you cannot see, but obviously I need both hands because I'm controlling the desk on one side. I'm looking at the... So I got both, right? But when I watch TV, I pull the Bundy. I'm not even going to dispute it. The Bundy happens. And you didn't see shit like that on TV. They never showed that shit on TV. That's what was so cool. Like, you did not see that. That's what worked. Oh, I love it. I love it. Married with Children. Find it in 2-minute increments. Like I said, I do know it was on Amazon. Maybe if you got a VPN or something, you can get overseas Amazon. You'll probably find it still on there. But, oh, my word, what a fantastic show. Thanks for that, Dory. Thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. So, I knew you'd like it. Oh. I knew I was doing your type of stuff this week.
Oh, no, it was just the things of the two things that got me every time. Picture it. Sicily, 1912, that, and the Polk High stories. I mean, it got me every single time. I mean, running gags done to perfection. So, you said Barbara Streisand just now, right? The Streisand effect. Yes, you did. Yes. Okay. I will just get Barbara Streisand and the star of my movie. It takes me like a quick mental second just to align them. Very similar, redheads, very dramatic. Same people, same thing, right? So, my movie, okay. Right? I found on Disney Plus. Again, go back to Disney Plus archives. What's there? What 80s movies are there? So it's the kind of plot contrivance that can only happen in an 80s movie. You have it starts off 1948, a rich husband and wife, they're driving to the house in the country. The wife is heavily pregnant. Okay, they sit in the back seat of their fancy car. This is a Rolls Royce. The wife suddenly goes into labor. They pull off into a small little one-horse town, go to the hospital, but the hospital's only treats people who work for the local factory, and everyone in the town works for the factory. So they can't treat her, and they can't deliver the baby, and the doctor says, well, the house is owned by, or the factory is owned by the guy who lives across the road. Rich man walks across the road, buys the factory in 2 minutes, and comes back, and now they deliver the baby, right? Mm. So at the same...
Ridiculous scenario.
Ridiculous. Oh, no, wait. This is plausible, right? The next part of it is at the same time, a local, more humble, factory working husband and wife walk in. They're also about to give birth, right? So at the same time, two couples, one rich, one poor, or working class, factory workers.
I think I know what this is. I can't think what it's called, right. But I also think I know the star.
Okay, yes. So they both give not only... Do each of them have one baby girl? They have twins, right? Now, the confused old nurse, I think she's drunk. I can't pick out if she's drunk or not. Mixes the babies up, and then we fast forward to 1988, all right? And the children, the babies that went off with the rich family, now are running the father's company. And the ones that went off with the poor family or the working class family are now still working for the factory. But the one daughter is now the foreman or runs the factory. Both of them.
And they, of course, look nothing like their parents. They look like the other parents.
Nothing. And they're supposed to be twins, but the two of them look nothing alike. The movie is Big Business with Bette Midler and Lily Tomlin.
I actually remember it. I think I saw it on the big screen.
You would have. They play two versions of each other. So they play both twins. Industrial Lights and Magic got involved. I mean, they didn't just do Star Wars. They did everything, right? So it's now the story of now the ones who are living in the sticks. Their factory is now going to get sold and closed down. And now they're going to New York to now go protest it. And from the moment everyone converges on the airport, mistaken identity, mixed timings, mistimings, one person turns around, a lift goes up, the other lift comes, they come out, and it's just 60 to 70 minutes of this, of a very elaborate episode of Three's Company.
I mean, Paolo, what you're describing is a word we have not used very often on the show, Shenanigans?
It is Shenanigans. It is called The Shenanigans of Big Business. So it's just a lot of that. It's just a lot of, you've got two sets of people who look identical, but of course the two Bette Midler, they're supposed to, obviously they're the twins, and they're kind of similar, and the two Lily Tomlin are kind of similar, but it's a whole nature, nurture debate. They're identical twins, but brought up in different environments, blah, 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 blah. But the whole thing, and each one of them has a love interest, and the whole twist is how each of the men end up, they all change love interests by the end. Sorry, spoiler alert. Okay, they all change love interests by the end. The only person who notices that there are four different people, because everyone keeps thinking, oh, you changed your clothes. Oh, I like what you did with your hair. How did it's that nonsense, right? How did you change so quickly? Did you have a change of clothes in the lift? Whatever. So it's a lot of that. And the only person that notices is a homeless man who hangs around outside the hotel. But because he's a homeless man and drinks, he thinks, oh, well, I'm obviously drunk.
Yeah.
And the whole message is that everybody has, I mean, this is not a very plausible message, has a twin out there, to which the closing scene of it is the homeless man notices all of them coming out now with their swapped partners, okay?
Yes.
And he looks next to the rich version of himself. Roll credits and roll Steve Winwood, Higher Love. It is shenanigans. It is silly shenanigans. It is honestly something you just put on in the background while you're maybe working at night, whatever, doing a PowerPoint presentation. It is honestly something like this. Bette Midler.
I have a question.
Yes.
I see Seth Green is in this movie.
He is.
What's he, a tiny child?
A very young Seth Green. He's probably about 11 or 12, right? And he is the bad Bette Midler's, or the rich Bette Midler's son. Right, but she's got no relationship with him, right? A couple of things out of this is that it's directed by Jim Abrams. Now, Jim Abrams worked with the Zemeckis brothers on Airplane, Naked Gun, Top Gun, and this was his first movie alone. And you can kind of see he's trying to play that without the silliness. And so he's trying to, like, take that silliness into, like, something that could kind of happen. It kind of little bit works, but I think he needed the Zemeckis magic. I think if one of them was in with him, probably would have worked. You say, yes, Seth Green is in it. You know, like, a lot of weird 80s people by name. Like, I know when I see them, you know their names. The only one that I'll say is Michael Gross, who is played, we said it earlier, he was Michael Keaton. He was Stephen Keaton.
Alex Keaton.
Alex Keaton's father.
Father.
Yes.
On Family Ties.
He's the father from Family Ties.
Fred Ward. Fred Ward, isn't it? Fred Ward is infamous.
See, that's what I'm saying. You know, like, I know who Fred Ward is. Yes, I know, but I don't know his name is Fred Ward. He's that guy.
Right.
But I don't know his name's Fred Ward.
That guy from that thing.
Yes. So that's Fred Ward. Here's the funny thing, right? You say you watch it at the big screen. So the reason this movie didn't do that well, and there's a common link here, right? It came out exactly the same weekend as Big, okay? And in both of them, the toy store that they go to in Big, and they make sure that you see the toy store, is FAO Shorts, which is the toy store where Tom Hanks plays the piano floor. This toy store is also in Big Business, and a lot of theaters would give you a double bill, get to watch Big and Big Business together, right?
Oh, big business.
Yeah.
Big business, I get it.
It confused the shit out of people.
Big.
Yeah, they didn't know. They didn't know the difference. Yes. They thought it was the same movie, so they're like, well, what do I want to... So, that's what it did.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's a bit of a boo-boo why they did that. So...
That is so cool. I am going to track this movie down because I think that my 15-year-old might actually enjoy it because the shenanigans are... superb, from what I remember.
It is.
They're very good shenanigans.
Top class shenanigans. I mean, if we love a shenanigan, but this is top class shenanigans. I mean, it's like revolving doors, literally shenanigans. That's what they do with the shenanigans. It's even on the movie poster, they got the revolving doors. So that is my movie, Big Business, or Married with Children. Now, I just want to close off just talking about how we're not really nostalgic for the 80s, but we're nostalgic for the retelling of the 80s, right? So from theconversation.com, this website looks very serious reporting, even have a paywall that you know. So it talks about Stranger Things and how Stranger Things put like old songs back into the zeitgeist. And it talks about the, even the collab. I got to show you some of these photos of Quicksilver, the surf brand, did a collab with Stranger Things. And they've got like all these like windbreakers and caps and all that very 80s inspired, right? So they're saying nostalgia sells, but it says no. What we're actually buying into is something called pseudo-nostalgia, right? Because obviously they're not selling Stranger Things inspired stuff to us, right? Who were actually in the 80s.
Yeah.
They're selling it to Gen Z and up, right? Or Gen Z and below, whichever way, right? So they're selling them a telling of the 80s. Now, what they call it is we are buying, or they are buying retrostatic products. Retrostatic. And service.
Retrostatic, what a great name for a band.
Hey, that's awesome. Like, that should be our, like, Steve Winwood tribute band, Retrostatic. That actually have little relation to 1980s reality whatsoever. Okay? So then they go through, like, okay. Stranger Things. They talk about in Ghostbusters Afterlife, they have a new version of the Stay Puft Man. They say, no, it's not. It's little Stay Puft Man, which never existed in the 80s, right? And a lot of things from Stranger Things. It didn't really exist. It's a version of it, right? So we're nostalgic for things that didn't exist. Now, for us, we take pride in this because we were there with the Zoomers. We feel nostalgic for the 80s because we played a part in it. Now, we can act as experts. Oh, if you like that Kate Bush song, you're going to love Babushka. You know, you know, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Keep trying on that one, Father. Keep trying.
So then they talk here about this electric car that's being released, the first electric car from the 80s. They're putting it out again. But the closing line is, the 1980s are back, but it's worth remembering these are not the true 1980s. No matter how great the fashion faux pas, consumers who embrace the current 1980s revival will go to that time through pseudo-nostalgia and compensatory reconsumption. Told you. It's a very clever website. What do you think about that?
Also, you know, I mean, sorry to get scientific, but you also know that memory is not real. Like, how you remember something is not how it was.
No.
Your brain tricks you.
Hats, yes. So, has this whole past hour just been a fever dream by an autistic child looking into a snow globe? We're not just being mean, that was literally the plot of Saint Elsewhere.
Speaking of a running gag,
that was literally what happened in Saint Elsewhere. Autistic child looked into a snow globe, imagined the whole thing. And Hill Street Blues, and fucking probably Modern Family down to the end of it. So what do we even... Oh, Dory, that has been a packed show. One thing you take out of it, what was your favorite thing from the show?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I think our discussion of Trainwreck was really fun, actually, because that's something that we both watched recently and we could really get passionate about.
Yes.
So I enjoyed that.
It was quite in depth.
Yes.
It's quite in depth. So everything you've heard on the show today, I mean, we spoke about She-Hulk, the better version than what's going to be, than what's on Marvel. We spoke about the Italo Disco documentary that I'm watching right after this.
That was cool too.
Married with Children, Big Business, and how we're not really talking about the 80s. Really, we're talking about something. I don't even know what we're talking about.
We're talking about the 80s in our minds, and that's all that matters.
Jesus. I think. Thank you for joining me, Dory. I think. Goodbye.
Bye.